So, as a quick introduction, my name is Stephen Borg. I'm the co-founder and strategist at Northwest Cadence. And as such, I do a lot of things in helping organizations adopt agile and lean practices. And that includes testing end-to-end. It's very important that we build quality in. I love TFS 2012. It's my ALM tool of choice, although I can't wait to see what's coming next. I've been an ALM MVP since 2005 and have worked with a lot of organizations on implementing and evaluating their test strategies. I've also spent a bunch of time as a certified trainer, so I've taken a lot of these exams before, although not as many as Anthony.
Thanks, Steve. Again, my name is Anthony Borton. I'm a Microsoft Visual Studio ALM MVP, just like Steve. I help organizations adopt ALM best practices using TFS, and I also have written a full curriculum on TFS 2010 and 2012, which I get to deliver around the world and help customers basically use TFS to the best of their capability.
It's good courseware.
Thank you. I've been a Microsoft Certified Trainer since 96, and as Steve points out, I've done a few exams, 58 at last count, so that's a little bit of experience, I guess, in exam taking, among other things. So look, it's really good to be back doing another Jumpstart with you, Steve.
Excellent. So this Jumpstart is software testing with Visual Studio 2012. And the course topics today, after this introduction, we'll jump right into an exam overview, which will dive a little bit more deeply into what we'll be covering. At that point, we'll talk about the three main areas, creating and configuring test plans, managing test cases, and managing test execution. At that point, we'll wrap up. Quick expectation setting. The target audience for this is officially software testers. I have put in there and developers. I think that is very important. IT professionals are who this certification is for, technically. I don't think that hits it right. I think it's IT developers as well. But definitely IT pros sitting in there works as well. Some prerequisites. You should have worked with testing, managing test cases, creating and working with bugs, etc. If you haven't done much or you want to dive in more detail, there's a free book, Continuous Testing, or Testing for Continuous Delivery with VS 2012. And you can find it here at tinyurl.com/testingcd. One last thing I'd like to cover before I hand it over to you is the MVA community. It's the Microsoft Virtual Academy. It's a great place to keep up with the latest Microsoft technologies. You probably know about it since you're here prepping for this exam. But if you sign up today, you can get 50 MVA points by going to aka.ms/MVA voucher and entering the ALM497 code.
Fantastic. I get 50 points, Steve, just for being here today.
Yes, you do.
Lovely.
At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Anthony, and he can kick off a little bit about a more in-depth view of what this exam is all about.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve. So in this particular module, I want to talk a little bit about the certification itself, just a little bit, and then we'll have a look at some more details to cover just this exam. So let me dive down into the certification. So a look at the slide there, you'll see that the Microsoft Certified Solutions Developer Application Lifecycle Management Certification requires those three exams that you see there. If you have a look on the MVA website, you'll see Steve and I have already done a jumpstart on delivering continuous value with Visual Studio 2012 Application Lifecycle Management. So that's a great resource to help you get started for that exam. Today we're here to talk about software testing with Visual Studio 2012. And for those people interested in or watching it live, we're back tomorrow looking at administering Visual Studio Team Foundation Server 2012. So those three exams will get that certification for you. Now let's talk a little bit more about this specific exam. So you can find the Microsoft Exam Preparation Guide using that shortened URL at the top there. And that exam preparation guide gives you a bunch of information, including a list of all of the things that you need to ensure that you're familiar with. Now, Steve and I'll do our best to cover all of those today. The exam code itself, 7497. And as Steve pointed out, the primary audience they list as IT professionals. But Steve and I agree that it's probably more the software tester and developer, more than an IT pro.
I agree.
Although IT professional is a very broad and encompassing label, I guess. Your pass marks around about the 700 mark, expecting around 48 questions, give or take, just to set some expectations. For this exam, I don't remember being overly stressed for time. I guess I've done a few of these exams, so from my perspective, usually there's a couple of hours. We won't talk about the specifics there, but personally, my exam taking technique is, I usually take about an hour to go through those questions, and I'm someone that sort of, well, I either know it or I don't know it. Sometimes you get lucky. A subsequent question can make those synapses fire a certain way and help answer a question that maybe you reviewed earlier.
Or it might just flat out give you the answer as part of, as part of the setup. It happens on occasion, absolutely.
And you'll take those gifts. They're good points.
Absolutely.
And it was released. The exam was released in September last year. So it's been out there for just a little while now. And I think there's probably a lot more momentum behind these exams and certifications as the awareness grows. Would you agree?
I would. One thing I will mention, it's based on the released version, the RTM version of Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. So it's a 2012. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't include Update 1 or Update 2. In my experience, that didn't really matter for this exam, but I just want to make sure that everyone's aware of that before we get started.
I think it's well and truly worth pointing out, Steve, because I think Update 1 and particularly Update 2 offered a lot of things for testers. You know, the web-based test management experience, things like some of the cloning of test plans. These are all in those updates. So, you've got to be very mindful that you forget that or compartmentalize that if you're going to go into this exam.
Yep. Although I don't think there's anything in this exam that will cause you grief if you studied the Update 2, for instance. There's nothing that, no questions you'll get wrong, potentially, at least that I ran into.
No, that's fine. I suppose in optimizing your study time, don't spend lots of time with a web-based testing experience.
Nope, or anything in Update 1 or Update 2. But if that's all you have installed as you're walking through for preparation, that's okay.
Absolutely. So I think both the, certainly the VM that I'm using is an Update 2 VM. Is yours?
Mine's Update 1. I tried to go back at least one level. I couldn't get an RTM version.
No, neither could I. So
I did get to go back one.
So we'll point out a couple of those things if we think of it during the demonstrations to make that just a little bit easier for you, perhaps.
Perfect. All right.
So looking at the audience profile in a little bit more detail there, I've got some points there. So again, candidates for the exam are really software testers. That's our take on it. You know, people that manage the process of running tests, creating and monitoring bugs, and managing and mitigating issues that a software organization has in controlling test coverage for project requirements. That's a big sentence.
That's a big sentence. And to be fair, that big sentence comes right out of the exam prep guide, right? That's where we grabbed it, so it's exactly it.
Exactly.
I think you might have put it a little bit more cleanly had you written it yourself.
Oh, I would have translated it to Australian. put a mate on the end there or something. The qualified candidate typically has a strong understanding of the software testing role, a strong understanding of modern testing practices, and the ability to implement testing practices using Microsoft technologies. And I think that's really spot on the mark there. So, I mean, it's really an exam that focuses on some testing. So most candidates that I would expect would have some of that testing background, or at least be probably a developer looking to enhance their knowledge, their skills in that area. So I think that's a pretty good assessment of the audience there. If we have a look at the skills being measured in this particular exam, unlike the last one where the pie was many, many slices, here it's a pretty nice even three-way split. So what I'll call out here is create and configure test plans is about a third. Manage test cases is another third, but then the execution is really only a third of the result, or a third of the questions, so I shouldn't say result.
Yep.
So make sure that you allocate your time in your study accordingly. So, divide that time into those little, can you have quadrants that are a third? It's not really a quadrant.
Thirds?
Third-rant. So divide your time in equally across those three areas, and that'll go a long way in getting you ready for the exam.
It will.
Okay.
Although some areas are harder than others.
Harder.
Same amount of, I don't know. It, for me, there were ones I needed to study a little bit more carefully.
And I think that's fairly common for everyone. One of the techniques that I'd normally recommend is to sort of print out that exam preparation guide, have a look at each of the topics, list them down, and just do a self-assessment. Pretty confident with that, tick. Ooh, haven't really done much of that one, question mark. Go through and you'll have some ticks, you'll have some question marks. And of course, your exam prep is about turning the question marks into ticks.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that's my slide. I think we're ready to hand over and kick off the next module, Steve.
Absolutely. So let's talk about creating and configuring test plans. Now, given three big buckets, we had to decide how we're going to break this up. Rather than do three 2-hour sessions, we decided we'd break each section up into, cover half, and Anthony will cover half. So I'm going to cover, in creating and configuring test plans, the first two, creating the test plan properties, and secondly, configuring test settings. I'll then turn it over to Anthony, who will cover defining configurations, creating test suites, and configuring those test suites.
That sounds like a good idea.
All right. Now, before we get started on that, I'm going to pop up a big, giant slide to just walk through an overview, however, of some of the different tools and things that you should be aware of. My apologies for the busyness of this slide and the insane craziness, but I think it grounds a little bit of what we're trying to look at. Let's start right up at the upper left-hand side with the Microsoft Test Manager. This is a separate tool, which you'll see repeatedly throughout the day, that we open up and do most of our tester-based things from. Things like test planning and management, test case management, lab management, manual testing, and exploratory testing. Another IDE used for quality is the Visual Studio IDE. Things like code quality analysis, unit testing, UI automation testing, performance testing, and load testing. Now, for this exam, we're going to be focused predominantly on the left-hand side with the Microsoft Test Manager itself. We don't spend an awful lot, in fact, we spend very little time in the Visual Studio IDE itself. I'm going to have some automation testing just for a demo, but it's already built. It's not something that we even demonstrate. There's the Microsoft Feedback Client, and although we won't talk about that today, it's a powerful tool for getting feedback from users back to your development team to let them know if they're on the right track. Team Foundation Server sits in the back end and handles things like work item tracking, source control, the lab management services themselves, test execution services are handled there, build services, and of course, reporting and business intelligence. All of those things are very critical for us. Now, we have some pluggable components that are on the exam. These are test runners, the diagnostic data collectors, our build engines, and lab environments, and we'll be talking about these throughout the day. I wanted to lay out a basic structure, however, so we can see kind of how things fit together from an infrastructure standpoint. Having said that, let's jump into creating test plan properties. What you're going to find is that a vast majority of what we'll be doing today is in the IDE, doing it through demonstrations, understanding what they are inside of demonstrations. What the study guide says, if you pop up the study guide, here are the areas under create test plan properties. They are selecting the test settings, selecting configurations. We're going to be defining the name, description, area, path, and iteration. Anyone who's ever worked with a work item will have no trouble doing that at all. That's a pretty simple one. Selecting test environments and assigning a particular build to a test plan. To do those things, we're going to jump straight into a demo. Like I mentioned, this is a very demo-focused course, I think that's fair to say.
Absolutely.
I think outside of demos, I maybe have 20 slides total. So a lot of it's going to be focused on the demo. So you'll pay close attention as we're walking through the demo, and I'll call things out and highlight them as necessary.
So let me just butt in there, Steve, for a moment.
Sure.
So if you compare that to, say, the previous jumpstart that Steve and I did around the continuous delivery of value, I think there was a lot more theory involved in that, a lot more background knowledge. One of the things about the testing exam is that it really is hands-on. You've really got to know how to use that tool. And I think that the approach that we've taken in choosing to do a lot more demos in this particular jumpstart really is driven by the fact that that's what you need for the exam. You just need to be able to use it.
Absolutely.
Would you agree?
That's a fantastic point. It's all about the using here. It's the execution. Yeah. Very little theory. It's all about getting your hands dirty and understanding that in depth the various components of the tool. So let's jump right into a demo. I'm going to put on my technical tester hat right now. I could be a test lead. I have some technical skills to work maybe with the IT professionals in the organization, as well as some senior type testing abilities, because I'm going to be setting up and understanding our test plan. So let's switch over and take a look at our environment here. And you can see we have the testing center here. And you can stretch it as big as you want, or you can blow it up to take up the full of the screen. I'll probably blow it up for the full screen. I think that love that extra real estate. And the first thing to note here when we're talking about a test plan is it's in the Testing Center tab. We have contents, results, and properties. But even before that, I want to be able to reach out and see here where we're talking about Tailspin Toys Iteration 2. That's our test plan. And we can go click on that, and it'll bring us into the Testing Center where we can go and actually select our projects. So we've got, in this case, two different TPCs, Team Project Collections, and I'm going to select where I want to put my test plans. Test plans only belong to team projects. So I'm going to tie it to Tailspin Toys, connect now, and notice I've got two test plans already, Iteration 1 and Iteration 2. I'd like to add an additional test plan, and we'll call this one Iteration 3.
That's creative,
that
Steve.
That is so creative. Now here's where we can set an area and an iteration path. I might set it to Iteration 3 here. And the area path you can set if this test plan was going to be just against the business logic, the database, or the website, we might want to specify. But in my case, it's going to be against the application as a whole. We're going to test things in sprints. So I'm going to add this next test plan. This is my test plan, Iteration 3. Now I'm going to take this Iteration 3 and select it and start from scratch, basically, with a brand new test plan. And the reason I want to start here is I don't want to confuse it by introducing test suites and things that will be added later. This is my test plan, Iteration 3. I have the properties of my test plan, and this is what this entire demo and section is about. So let's switch over to the properties, and notice I've got my name, a quick description. This tests the new functionality in Iteration 3 plus any regression tests from earlier iterations. Notice it has an owner. We can reassign this owner to anybody else. We'll leave it assigned to Brian Keller. That's who I'm logged in as. I'm pretending to be Brian.
Is there any benefit to being the owner? What's the significance of that?
It really isn't. It doesn't have much significance at all. In fact, there's zero impact.
Yeah.
Except it does appear right here. It says who's the owner. So, I mean, there might be some street cred you get from the owner, but that is about it.
They're the go-to person in case you got any questions, let's say.
That might be. They're just the go-to person. So back over to properties again. Brian Keller, the state of the plan is active or inactive. Now this is one of the things for the test that I really want to stress. You want to understand the states and the state transitions of everything in this whole suite of things. So in our case, we've got a state and it can be either active or inactive for test plans. Active or inactive for test plans. If it's inactive, we're not going to be executing this test plan. And over time, we may make some of them inactive, like Iteration 1 and Iteration 2. I might make those inactive because we're no longer using them.
And as an inactive test plan, then you're not going to be able to select it when you start up Microsoft Test Manager. It won't appear in the list there.
Right. Yeah. That's excellent. We have a start date and an end date for this iteration. Now, I'm going to leave these. They look kind of funky because they're way back in 2012. But if you look back at the time that I have at the bottom, it's about then as well. So this is set back in time. The area path and the iteration was simply copied. That's something that came right from before. So we've defined the name, the description, the area path, the iteration, the start date, end date, state, and owner, which is one of the things that the study guide says we need to prepare for.
Fantastic.
That's about the easiest thing ever. right there.
So in looking at those terms, I mean, you've mentioned it already, these are very, very much TFS work item type terms, you know, talking about area path and iteration path. It's alluding to the fact that TFS has a very significant and important role to play here. A common question I get is, you know, can we just use Microsoft Test Manager? Do we need to have TFS? What would you say to that, Steve?
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
you need to have TFS. In order to use MTM, you need to have TFS. If you want to just experiment with it, and mm-hmm. you can pull down your MSDN subscription and you want to work with this, one thing you can do is set up a TFS online instance. And you can go to tfs.visualstudio.com and sign up for an account there. That will handle most of what you need. Not all, but most of what you need for this exam. You'd certainly be able to pass it because there's very few questions that are that specific on the TFS side.
So I guess thinking of MTM, an analogy that I'll sometimes use, it's not 100% technically accurate, but if I was to say that MTM is to TFS what Outlook is to Exchange. So Exchange does all the heavy lifting. It moves those mail messages around. And Outlook's the client that we get to use on our desktop. So if we think of that when we talk about Microsoft Test Manager. So Microsoft Test Manager is the client for our tester. But TFS does all the storage of the test cases, the suites, the test results, and all those sorts of things. So, you know, maybe that would help people get a good understanding of the relationship there.
That is a great way to put that. It completely explains what mm-hmm. it is. Same relationship we have Visual Studio to TFS for developers. All right, let's jump back in and take a look at some of the settings that we have. This is one of those things that we're going to have to talk a little bit more deeply of in some of the test settings, but we're going to come into setting up our test environments and selecting our test environments. And if I look down here, I've got for manual runs and automated runs different test environments. Now you'll notice I have none configured here. I have no test environments configured. It's not one named none. just to be specific, right? And you don't have to have a test environment. If you don't have a test environment, when you set up your test settings, it will automatically default to collecting basically only data from the local machine from which the test is running. Now we may want to set up much bigger environments. Now I'm going to walk through setting up an environment in this particular demo. Mm-hmm. This is something that's loosely on the test, but not in deep, in technically, not too technically in depth.
So do you reckon we could actually create a test environment called None? Wouldn't that upset people?
That would upset people, absolutely.
So you take a good technology and find out how you can do evil with it.
So I'm going to manage my test environment, because selecting a test environment is one of the key things that we need to do. I'm going to click Manage here, and notice it brought me over to an entirely different tab. I'm now in the Lab Center tab. We'll be covering this tab a little bit more deeply later on, mm-hmm. so I don't need to spend too much time here. But instead, I'm going to create a new environment. And this new environment will be called my Tailspin Toys Web. And it's going to be a standard environment. I'm going to very briefly differentiate this. This is more on the TFS admin exam than it is on the testing exam. But you do need to know that a standard environment does not require System Center Virtual Machine Manager, whereas the System Center Virtual Machine Manager environment requires it. It kind of makes sense. Tailspin Toys Web, we need to specify a machine. And I'm going to add a machine, and I'm going to call it VSALM. That happens to be the local machine on which I'm running. We need to make sure that we can get to it. I'm going to use .brian because it's a work group machine in this particular case. Type in the password. And I can select a role for this. This is going to be my web server box. And this is my machine. Now, I can add as many machines as I want in theory. I'm running in a virtual machine with only one machine. Therefore, in my network, I've got one machine. I can only add that one machine. You can then specify some machine properties for that, and you can do it through tags. Like, I might have a tag called OS. What OS is it running? And in this case, it's Windows Server 2008 R2. Okay, so we can specify which particular tags we want. These are used later to know when we're executing test cases to come back and run those. There's an advanced tab, and should we we can configure our environment to run UI tests. This will run the UI tests on the web server itself. We need to specify a test agent that will run as this. I'm not going to configure this environment to run tests. That's not part of the exam. I'm going to just leave that off as simple as possible. Let's move on instead to summary. It's going to create this environment. And the last thing we need to do is pass some verification. Let's click verify. And of course, my test controller is not yet available. This is one of the things that we have to deal with to make sure we have a valid test controller. I'm going to fire up the test controller configuration because this is one step that you do have to understand. So we'll start and we'll do the test controller configuration tool. And the test controller configuration tool is going to run under a particular account, and it must be registered with the particular team project collection that you're using. I'm tied right now to the Fabricam Fiber collection. What you need to know is test controllers, like build controllers, are tied to a single TPC. So I'm going to tie that to the Tailspin Toys collection. We also want to be how do we communicate with the test controller and what accounts should be run. I'm going to change this account to run under Brian with my own password here, and I can go ahead and test that, and it validates that it's correct. Under here there's a load testing section. Again, that's more on the Visual Studio side of testing. We'll be covering that in the admin course, but it's not necessary for studying for this course. This is the area that you need to study for here. I'm going to apply those settings and register it with the new project collection. It walks through all of the configuration areas and moves straight in. One moment. Configuring the ACL seems to take the longest piece. Again, like I mentioned, I've got on my technical hat here. This is the technical portion of this, but I'm trying to keep it as small as possible to focus on where in this exam that you may run into these questions.
And I guess once you've set the environment up, it's there for you to use then. So, I mean, it's not like this is something that you'd need to do over and over again. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. It's something you only need to do. You only need to do once.
I guess people, often when I'm doing demonstrations of lab and you're showing the setup side of things, they may get a little overwhelmed with the number of steps that are involved. And you think, well, no, wait a minute. Let me differentiate what you would need to do almost as a one-off. Versus those things that, once done, are there just for you to be able to use going forward. How's your environment going?
Oh, it's still going. Once you've configured your environment, and I'm going to come back to it again because I need to talk about it when we set up roles.
All right.
But I popped back over to my advanced property here, and my test controller is missing one drop-down, which is my second VSALM. Now there's two registered with the server, unless there is a... My refresh button is a little bit dimmed out. Let me do that one more time very quickly just to see if on that tab we have our second. Yeah, we have our second controller of the same name. So let's set this back up. Tailspin Toys Web. The machine itself, we'll add the machine back in, and once again we can blow through this very quickly, VSALM, and the role is going to be our web server. We're going to make this a work group, and you get to see it twice. We don't need any tags, we won't be using them. Our VSALM controller, we've got the correct one selected. Quick summary, and then on to verification where we can verify it. And yes, indeed, we now have our configuration.
Woohoo!
Once again, the thing I wanted to stress here is not necessarily walking through this whole environment setup. You do need to understand about how it's done, but not technically every single step for the exam. I'm going to finish this. And now I want you to notice here where it says VSALM web server not ready. Preparing for the operation. Create environment. It's now going to create our environment for us. It says not ready. It's going to take some time. This will take probably about 5 to 10 minutes to complete. It's going to create this environment for us. Mm-hmm. It'll then go to deploying some of the test agents onto the machine. Currently, here it says installing the test agent. Currently, there are no test agents on the machine. It will then need to configure those test agents. This is something that TFS can handle for you automatically when you set up this lab environment.
And isn't it so much better now in 2012? So if you wind the clock back to 2010, do you reckon this would have taken 5 to 10 minutes, Steve?
No, it would not. I would have had to remote into each of those. I would have needed to install and configure the test agent myself. Royal pain in the rump.
Oh, yeah. And not just the test agent. Back then, of course, it was the workflow agent, the test agent, and the build agent.
Absolutely.
So you had to get all those agents on there, and you had to get them all configured correctly. And then when you sucked it into the SCVM environment, you had to make sure you didn't lose any of those configurations. So, I mean, if you have used or tried to do this with 2010, give yourself another go with 2012. It is so much better now.
It is much, much better. So here's my environment. It's going to be installed. Mm-hmm. I have created an environment. And one of the things that I needed to show was selecting an environment. However, in my experience, there's some areas that that we need to cover in setting it up for the exam. And that a wonderful idea from folks that I should be zooming in on some of these areas, and I will drop in Zoom It on my next break. Let's talk now about our Tailspin Toys environment. We're going to go back from the lab center and wouldn't you know it, my machine is completely locked up waiting for me to configure my test agent.
They like that sometimes.
Oh. And there it was. It wasn't. It was just a lost to the connection. All right, it's ready. The environment's ready. Let's pop back over to now to our testing center, and now on our test environment. Notice we have two test environments. Now we have manual runs and automated runs. I don't want to dive deeply into the automated run section except for a demo more towards the end. So we're not going to talk about it. It's almost identical to what we have in the manual runs, except you must specify a test environment that has something that can run the agents. So we have our test environment, Tailspin Toys Web, and we now have some test settings that we can do. Another thing I want to do is I want to walk into builds and associate builds that are currently in use. We also have some various configurations. Now, I don't want to talk about configurations, I'll be stealing your thunder, but I do want to talk about builds. We can set a filter for the builds. Like we can say, what build definition do we want to use? We want the Tailspin Toys iteration, and we can also specify a build quality. I'll leave that blank and set that as my build filter. And now I can set the build that's currently in use. Let's save the test plan and select the build. And notice, even though I was in the test plan properties, it brings me over to an assigned build area. That's actually under, I believe it's organized as well. You can get to that piece. So here we have the build in use, none, and we have all of the builds from the past. I can select one of the builds, like say this is the build that is deployed to my test environment, and I can assign it to the plan. It'll tell me, hey, here's all of the things, now that that's assigned to the plan. If I wanted to compare it with this existing build, I could compare .3 to .4, and you can see here we have just a single work item.
So let's put that into context for a moment. So just imagine the testers that are out there listening, that, you know, imagine that the developers come walking down the hallway, USB stick in hand, and they say, hey, here's the latest version of the build. And they hoy that over to the testers and they walk off back down the corridor into the distance. Now, apart from the usual profanities that you're calling out to them, you're saying, hey, what's changed? You know, why do you care? Well, as a tester, if they've changed the checkout experience, well, that's where you want to focus your testing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, finding out what's gone into the build is, or what's changed, is critically important for a tester. And again, it'd be interesting. It's a shame we can't do a quick, easy poll. Maybe we can. We should have found that out before. But I guess relying on the developers to create release notes.txts or to convey that information accurately and in a timely manner, this just makes the problem go away. Stephen, I want to upset your demonstration there.
No, this is a really important intro.
But I'm often asked, where do those build definitions come from, and what's this about the build quality indicators? Is it convenient to pop across into Visual Studio?
I think that's a great idea.
Would that be a good idea?
It will be. Yeah. I'm going to come back in just a moment into Visual Studio because I think that's a great idea. Once I wrap up just a little bit more going into some of those questions and things that you had mentioned, I think that's a great plan. I'll go ahead and do that. Let's go back in and take a look at what the difference is here between a couple of builds. And I want to look, I think the way you put it was brilliant. I come running down with this USB and I deploy a new one, and what has changed? These are the things that I've worked on. So between the build you were testing now and the build I'm testing now, here are all of the various things I've worked on. I've completed these two tasks, I've resolved this user story, and I've resolved a bug. Now I know as a tester that I'm going to need to go in and work on that test case.
Excellent.
I mean, build test cases for that or test that particular thing, as well as validate this that this bug has actually been fixed.
Well, I guess even also determine if it's worth running a test pass through there.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a look and there's just one obscure little task that may not be directly testable, it's probably not worth us worrying about that. But if you see in here we've got a bug fixed, we've got a user story, a requirement delivered, I think it's well worth jumping in and testing that.
It absolutely is. And here's the thing that can sometimes get you, though. Developers might forget, perish the thought, they check in something and they fixed two bugs, or they made some kind of changes that aren't really tracked. They said, I just made a small change to the login screen. No one will notice that. I'm not going to associate it with anything, and they check it in. How do you know, as a tester, that you need to regress that?
Mm-hmm.
You do that through something called test impact. Now, if you're running .NET 2.0 or higher, watch what happens. When I'm comparing these two builds, watch what happens when I assign this later build to the plan. It pops up a warning that says, hey, some of the manual tests that you ran before, they need to be re-executed, potentially, because the code underlying those has changed. This is smoking cool, because it's looking at the source code itself. And if we view those recommended tests, I've got none in this particular instance. that's because I'm in iteration 3. Let me go back to my one prior test plan and look at those properties so you can see maybe a better example. As I pop into putting in that .6 build and assign it to plan, this one has some recommended tests. And in this case, they're the same test run with three different environments, three different areas.
So if I've got a couple of hundred test cases, I don't have to go and run those couple of hundred. I can focus on three?
On three. So it's a massive reduction potentially in the amount of regression tests that you need to run. Now, here's the kicker for me.
Mm-hmm.
This gives you, again, .NET 2.0 or higher, a real nice focus. But there's a caveat. If your code depends on changes to a database or your tests compare to changes in a database, that won't be reflected here. So it won't show you if a database table has changed, like a lookup table. You know, if you no longer deal with Germany as a customer, potentially, you have no customers in Germany or no sales rep there, you may remove that from the database of your available representatives to send stuff to. Well, it won't show up here, because this just looks at the source code.
And if you've changed stored procs, or if you're calling out to unmanaged code, or any of those things. So I guess if you're in a nice little managed land, for the most part, this stuff's gold, absolutely gold. But just be mindful if you're doing these other things, because they're an exception.
Absolutely. Now, I want to get technical for just one moment. This is called test impact analysis. And how test impact analysis works is that when you are on the local machine testing a web server and you click a button to say, go check in something, for instance, or go to the checkout menu, you click checkout, that button, it sends a note to the server, and the server says, all right, what methods are being called? So what it does is it looks at what's called the stack trace, which is simply an enumeration of methods. And it associates every test case with that enumeration of methods. Those methods then are cross-linked when we have a new build, and it says what methods have changed. So test impact really can find out what methods have been called. I think that that's a very technical piece, but it's very much worth knowing.
Agreed.
How that happens. It's not a line by line. That would be the code coverage, which we also can do code coverage. But test impact looks at method by method level. All right, as we step back in and we've seen these, I'm going to go back to my iteration 3 and select that plan so we can continue. And at this point, I'm pretty much wrapped up. I've shown the properties. We've assigned a build in use. We've looked at the particular test environments. We haven't done any test settings yet because that's the next section that I'm going to work on. So at this point, I'm going to pop over and we'll take a look at the PowerPoint once again. And this is where we'll talk about creating test settings, individual settings, and what kind of data is collected. So at this point, configure test settings. What the guide says is creating multiple test settings. So we can see that we've got many different ones we can collect. Selecting data and diagnostics. We need to talk in depth about the data and diagnostics and setting up roles. Thank goodness we have our new environment because now we can set up some roles. And that brings us to the demo of creating test settings. So I'd like to pop over once again to the demo machine and we'll take a look at what it takes to create particular test settings. Once again, back on the machine, I'm going into the test settings place, and I've got a default. I've got some other ones here that already exist. Lightweight diagnostics, full diagnostics. I'm going to create a new one. And this new one will be called Everything and the Kitchen Sink. Why? We want it all. We're going to go in, and I'm going to set this up to collect every piece of possible data. Why? So that I can explain to you what each piece does.
You could also call it, I hate the TFS administrator.
You could also call it, yes. Or I really hate the person who has to back up the TFS database or provision its SAN.
Yeah. So
next is the particular roles. And this is where we've set up those environments and we have a role called a web server and we have our local machine. I'm going to want both of those, my local machine and the remote web server, to do my testing against. So we'll click Next. Now, for data and diagnostics, this is a very key piece. For the local and the web server, we need to specify all of the data we want to collect at each point of these. So if we also had a SQL server, we need to specify what data do we want to collect at the SQL server. So let's start with local. And we don't need to collect a lot locally, just a few things. Let's collect the action log. This basically is used to collect every UI action I take. Now that's got to be on the local one, because I'm going to fire up IE, I'm going to fire up my application, it might be a WPF application, and I'm going to start clicking things on it. And I want to capture those clicks I perform. That's very important for fast forward for manual testing. You can click configure on all of these, and inside of configure, it'll tell you what are things that you want to capture. In this case, I want to capture all applications except the following. And there's a list of some common Microsoft ones here that we don't want to collect. So we're not going to collect data across those things. You can also say, I only want to collect applications data from the following list. So if you needed to switch to Word and make notes, you know, WinWord's excluded here, but it may be that you have other applications you want to exclude, or you want to exclude everything except that.
I like the idea of automatically excluding Outlook.exe. The temptation to pop in and check your email in the middle of a test.
Yeah, that's a good point. Really good. It doesn't capture it. You could head over. Now, another thing you can capture is some recording sessions. If there's a user delay of more than a certain number of seconds, you can capture that. Now, why might you want to capture user delay?
To show how lazy your tester is.
I was thinking more along the lines that there might be some long asynchronous calls going on in the back end, but yes, also to validate your lazy user testers.
Sorry, Steve.
Also, playback. Do you want to have a delay between actions when you're doing playback? In this case, yes, we want 0.1 seconds. That's pretty fast. A multiplier for a user delay between actions, we just want one. Search time for controls. This means if we're looking for a particular control, it'll wait 120 seconds. Practically, what that means is if your DOM, if you're on the website and, or WPF and your DOM is being manipulated and creating things on the fly, it'll wait for up to 120 seconds for those to exist.
So that seems fairly conservative.
That seems very conservative. Yeah. If your website is, has that kind of performance, you need some performance tuning at that point. So we'll go ahead and save this. And that's what we're going to capture. We're capturing an action log on the local server. These are all called remote servers. They're not the local one. These are local and remote diagnostics. I happen to be calling it web server. Now, we also, on the local one, are going to need what's called the ASP.NET client proxy for IntelliTrace and Test Impact. This is used for web applications if we're testing against .NET 2.0 or higher web applications running in IIS. You can configure that, but like many of them, the configuration is very boring. No configuration required, it just works. So not everything that has a configure button actually has interesting things to configure. This, what it does, when I click something locally in a website, it captures it and sends the information to the server and says, hey, I just clicked this link. Or, hey, I just clicked this button. That allows the server to correlate that button click with what activities are happening on the server. That's an important thing. Now, code coverage. I'm testing a website. So I'm going to want to capture all of the code coverage at some point, but I'm not going to need to do it locally. I'm just running a browser locally, right? The event log. Now, I may want to capture the event log for things that happen locally. There might be some security events or things that get captured locally, like if there's a security credential that's being passed that needs to validate locally in my credential store, that might throw something of an event log, so I'll capture it locally. And you can configure it to say, what event logs do you want to capture? Now, I want to capture the security event log as well as the application event log, potentially. And I only am going to catch the failure audits and the errors. And we can save that. And we can move on to IntelliTrace. IntelliTrace is wonderful data. I'm not going to capture it now. We'll come back when we do the web server. System information. This is to capture what's happening on that system. It captures things like the resolution, the operating system, the patch level, all those details. You don't configure it here. It's just nothing that you can do. Next is test impact. That collects the information that can help us decide when we move from build to build what tests we need to rerun, even if they're manual tests. I want that, but I'm going to be running. We can specify it here and set up any configuration that we need. This will configure the test impact for these all modules except these, anything signed with these, or and it ignores MTM. So if you want to automate MTM, and you want to test the tool itself, you would need to uncheck that and get rid of that. And there's some advanced settings here, which you can use to collect data from ASP.NET applications running on IIS. Now, I don't need to do that here. I will need to do that on the remote machine. I need to do that on the server, which is the remote machine. And last is video recorder. And the video recorder will simply run a video recorder while I, the tester, am running. And I can choose to enable audio if I want. That way, the developer can hear me going, "Gah! What on earth were you thinking?" If I don't want them to hear me say that, I don't want to get in trouble, I might uncheck that enable audio recording. And you can also choose to save the video recording if the test case passes. It's always saved for test cases that fail. I would uncheck that for saving disk space, even though even a 30-minute run, if you have these defaults below, is only going to be a few megabytes. So it's not a giant amount of data that's collected with the video recording, but still, if the test case passes, you may not want to save it.
Agreed. I think one of the things that I'll call out there is another change between 2010 and 2012. So again, people familiar with the tool in the previous version, don't fall into any little tricks they might play for you. You don't need to install Windows Media Encoder or the Silverlight encoder.
Oh, yes.
Now, isn't that's just so much better. So in earlier versions, you had to put those extra things on the machine manually, which I thought was a real drag. Now in 2012, that's gone away.
I mean, it is.
You can just, you put MTM on and it's going to grab that video.
That is a really good point. Next is your frame rate, bit rate, and quality. These just set up how much data you want to capture. How smooth should the mouse flows be and the quality. I keep these low. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just using it to repro bugs in the most cases, so keep those low. At that point, we're ready to now configure the web server itself. Now, the client role we don't need. We won't set up this. Now we'll select things like code coverage. So we can configure it, and which modules do we want to configure? And lastly, some more data. Should we collect data from child processes, etc.? You should provide a symbol file. Where do we go ahead and find those symbol files? And that could be under vsalm / drops / symbols.
So it can automatically go and search for those PDBs.
It will. It'll search for the PDBs and give you much better code coverage because of this. So you need to go find those. You can exclude things like Microsoft code, any public key tokens you want to exclude. All of those things can be excluded. And we can go ahead and save that. And then IntelliTrace. Event log is going to be about the same as it was before. We don't need to talk about that again. But IntelliTrace, we'll need to configure IntelliTrace. Now, IntelliTrace has a lot of options. And you don't really need to focus on all the options. I've got my technical tester hat on. I'm not going to beat this to death, however. But you need to know a couple distinct details. Two main ways to collect IntelliTrace data. This is data that you as a tester collects, and it allows the developer to almost step through the code if you have IntelliTrace events and call information selected. Means they can get your run and run against the server where they can just simply go through and say, well, we'll just say it this way. Anthony ran a test and he found a bug somewhere. He sends it to me. I open up the IntelliTrace log and I start stepping through the code and realize that Anthony got an out-of-memory exception on the web server. Well, I can't repro that. My machine has 64 gigs of RAM on it and I'm the only user, right? My dev box. Couple things you do need to know. You need to collect data from ASP.NET applications running on IIS. That has to be configured if you're going to collect IntelliTrace against that. And then you have several other more advanced capabilities here. I'm just going to pop them open. Modules to collect from, processes to collect or not collect from, which IntelliTrace events do you want to capture, and some advanced stuff. The maximum amount of disk space for each recording. Here it says 100 megabytes. Notice that's the smallest. Mm-hmm. This sucks up disk space like there ain't no tomorrow. So you choose 500 megabytes. You don't have to do too much recording to hit 500 megabytes of data. This is the hog.
I guess I'd also point out there that unless some of your team members have Visual Studio Ultimate Edition, that's probably not going to offer a lot of value to them.
That's a good point. You need to have Ultimate to read it. Test impact, we're going to collect test impact here as well, and it's pretty much the same thing, and we have to make sure that we have collect data from ASP.NET settings in advanced. Now, do you want to use a video recorder on the web server? That is probably going to be boring, right? Because the web, there's no video there. There's nothing to see, so you're probably not going to want to configure video for the web server in this environment. Let me finish this one up. Let's go to the summary, click finish, And I want to talk super briefly about this automated runs. If we build an automated runs test setting, you don't have the option in the roles to select that local role. Everything needs to be running on a separate machine. These are remote machines. If it's running on a remote machine and you're running those tests on that web server, by all means, record IntelliTrace, record test impact, and record a video, because this is what I think is smoking cool. You can run these automated tests at night on a headless server somewhere and you still get videos so you can see what failed when you come in the morning.
And I can claim that that was the work I did yesterday to my boss.
That's, yes, indeed. Look at that. All right, we're going to go ahead and cancel that. We don't need to set those up. The things to take away again, the test settings, everything but the kitchen sink is my new one, and I can have multiple ones like lightweight diagnostics, which capture far less data. And I can select those on any given run when I want. Now, I'm setting the defaults. So my default is everything but the kitchen sink. I want everything. That's my default run. Later on, you'll see when Anthony shows you how to execute some of these that you can go ahead and select different test settings based on your run. Go back to Tailspin Toys Web.
So would you do that in the real world, Steve? So, I mean, if you were offering advice there, would you suggest that you want one of those heavy settings as the default or one of the lighter ones? What's your personal take on that?
You know, my personal take is lightweight diagnostics ought to be your default.
Okay.
You really want to catch kind of the smallest possible data to start with, just because of the overall impact to the applications that are being executed, mm-hmm. but also because of the impact of gathering all that data inside of TFS. Now, there's some nice tools at the command line that'll help you clean those up. Not part of the exam, so I won't talk about them, but I would default to that lightweight one.
Okay.
How about you?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you want to be reasonably kind to the infrastructure folk. So again, putting your lightweight diagnostics there as a default. And then when I show you some test runs a little bit later, I'll show how, you know, if we're reproing a bug or if there's a better likelihood that we're going to find one, then we can step it up. So, you know, hopefully we're not getting too many bugs. So lightweight's good. And if we suspect there is a bug, then we can step up the collectors. And that's a good trade-off, isn't it?
It is. I think it is a good trade-off. I want to throw this out here. It might be more on the admin side. Mm-hmm. It's not part of the exam, but a rule of thumb is that every developer will contribute about 0.5 megabyte per developer per day to the size of your TFS server. It's a good rule of thumb for sizing your TFS database. On the other hand, if you have a tester, it's 0.5 gigabyte per tester per day until you reach that steady state of mm-hmm. bugs that you can start, you know, fixing the bugs and cleaning out all that data. So if you have a full, you know, Visual Studio Ultimate for your developers and you can use IntelliTrace, you're going to be looking at 0.5 gig per developer or per tester per day.
Wow.
At three orders of magnitude higher in terms of storage required. So it can very much blow up quickly, especially if you're not careful. You can keep it tight.
All right.
You can keep these lightweight diagnostics on. Well, let's jump back in and talk about just some tips and tricks before we leave. There we go, some configuring some of the test settings. We talked about what it said. We created multiple test settings, and we selected the data and the diagnostics, and we set up particular roles to run. That about covers not only what the course study guide says, but also what my experience on the exam has been as well. Exam best bets. As far as test plans go, create a few different test plans. You just create them. We're going to be going through a lot more stuff on creating configuring test plans. Do the whole end-to-end stuff. Create a test plan, add test suites, etc. Practice creating the different test settings and understand the data collectors. Understand what they do at a high level. You don't need to know click by click by click how to go in and configure, for instance, collecting IntelliTrace. You don't need to know that specifically, but you do need to know what all of the data collectors are for.
Excellent.
All right. Those are the exam best bets, and that is a wrap on our first piece.
I think it's time for a break. Time to top up the coffee.
I agree. We'll see you all in a few minutes.
See you.